Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
She grew up in an Indiana town, had a good-looking mama who never was around. But she grew up tall and she grew up right with them Indiana boys on an Indiana night.
Welcome back, guys. DJ S on KMOX 205. So there is a big shakeup in local media today. Sarah Finsky from St. Louis Magazine reported about an hour ago that NBC reported to KSDK that they have separated with longtime anchor Rennie Knott. They specifically said that there would be no details. They're not going to talk about it, just the fact that he's gone as of today. And I just want to say I send my love to Rennie. I don't know Rennie like I know Ezell and Chambers and, you know, Mike Bush and some of those guys. But I know him. I've known him a little bit for 20 years. And I have nothing but good things to say.
No.
He's a wonderful person.
Rennie's the greatest guy. You know, and I don't know him in the sense that, like, you know, you're going to take family vacations together or, you know, whatever. But I've known Rennie since I got here because we're in the sport. He was sports guy at the time. You're at the ballpark together. You're at Rams Park together. And when I was the new guy, he was one of the ones that, like, right away introduced himself, super kind, and it never changed, man. Rennie is one of the good ones. Rennie is phenomenal. Forget in this business. He is just a great guy.
Yeah.
And this sucks.
Yes. Extremely friendly, extremely generous, and I think he's incredible at what he does.
Yes.
So I'm not, like, worried about his future or anything like that. He's going to be just fine, but it's sad to see something like this happen to someone you know who's so cool.
Especially an OG like that.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, 20 years, what now? More than 20, because he just celebrated that, what, a year ago?
Yeah, it was January of 24.
Yeah, so I mean, 20 years at a place like that. And again, going from being a guy that's doing sports to running sports to, you know, being a morning news anchor, those are big climbs. That's a great career. And that's because Rennie works his butt off, man. I mean, you don't find anybody that does the grind better than him. Just, and does it without stepping on other people and does it without, you know, being weird or being pushy or bossy or anything like that.
Yeah. Well, Rennie, we have your back. All the best. Wheels, you have some information about aliens?
All right. So you guys want to, there are two parts here. One is a mathematical observation. And the other one is more about how we perceive the concept of aliens, right? Do the mathematical one first. So I know your favorite guy, Neil deGrasse Tyson. I saw him on a podcast.
I'm warming up to him.
Yeah, I mean, I get it. I get why people don't like him. I don't love him either, but I think he says some interesting things. And he was going over the math. So he was asked on a podcast, do we have alien civilizations in the Milky Way, which is our galaxy, right? That's the galaxy where our solar system resides. He said, oh, yeah. He goes, I did the math with a couple other friends. He said, by the math alone, the probability is that there are 100 civilizations in our Milky Way, in our galaxy. 100. And he pointed out, like, they were on a big round table, you know, where they were sitting. And the table's probably, like, I don't know, maybe 4 or 5 feet in circumference. Or in diameter, and he put down.
I don't know the difference.
Yeah, he put down a quarter, and said that's how much we've observed, really clearly of our galaxy, and that's how much we've explored essentially compared to the whole table, which means we basically see nothing. But by the math, there should be 100 alien civilizations, not just life forms, not bacterial civilizations was the term he used. How does that strike you guys? In our galaxy.
A little low.
You think?
I'm sorry, how many did you say?
100.
Mm.
This is another Neil deGrasse TikTok that I saw. And I apologize to my smart listeners. I'll get this wrong. But he was talking about this exact topic. And he said, here are the top
five elements you need for life. Do you see that one?
Yeah.
And it's like nitrogen, hydrogen, oxygen, something else. And he said, here are the five most abundant elements in the universe. And they were the same ones,
yeah.
Like, even in the exact order.
Mm-hmm.
So the things that there are the most of in the universe that we know are out there in abundance are exactly what you need for our brand of life.
Right. It was interesting. I just thought, like, and that's still, even in, like, saying that it's in our galaxy doesn't mean it's anywhere close or it's a distance that can be traveled or whatever, barring technological advances that far exceed ours, right? Yeah. And he said that that may not be necessarily, I don't know, I forget about the time frame that he used. But then he went on in the same podcast and they were talking about how we perceive the potential for an alien visitation or alien arrival or whatever. And he said, we tend to basically put our history onto the aliens. He's right. So in world history, when has it ever gone well for the less advanced civilization when they come across a more advanced civilization?
Probably never.
Yeah. I mean, basically never, right? It's never gone well for the less advanced one. So we kind of imprint that. So we figure if there are aliens that come here, well, their ability to transport themselves, to move that distance, whatever, would have us believe they're more advanced than us. So in because humans that are more advanced tend to crush other humans that are less advanced when it comes to where they want to be, right? Think of, you know, Europeans settling North America. Think of South America and the Spanish. Like, there are all kinds of examples of it. So we kind of put that image of what humans are like onto aliens, and that's why we have this fear that they could come here and they could take over or they would invade or whatever. But the truth is, we would have no idea how a different species from a different world in a different part of the galaxy would interact. Maybe they don't have the same meanness that we do. Maybe they don't need anything. Maybe they are just checking things out. And I thought that was an interesting observation, how our views and our concerns are all based on really how we are.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And even if you do continue to compare it to us, I mean, humans have gotten a lot better with that kind of stuff. There's still plenty of problems in the world. But if we do stumble upon, like, okay, the other day I was talking about the green turtles. They were endangered. We have done enough work now to where they can be taken off that list. So aliens might be looking at us like, oh, look at these creatures. Maybe we could come in and help them preserve their habitat. Yeah. I mean, that's just as likely as them coming in to like conquer us and strip us of our resources.
I mean, they could look at us the way that we look at a lot of animal species. We're like, oh, wow, look how cool that is.
Exactly.
Look how stupid that one is. Look how smart that one is. Like it could be that big of a difference in terms of how their minds operate compared to ours. And could be the opposite. They could be exactly like us. Because maybe that meanness, maybe that aggression is what it takes to evolve to the level that we've gotten to and that they've gotten to.
Brian's being a fun ruiner. He says they can say because of the math, but until we have proof of alien life, what does it even matter?
That's fair, right? Until there's proof, it doesn't necessarily matter, but it's a logical. It doesn't, again, that, he's not trying to prove that there are, you know, little green men or, you know, insectoids or whatever. Like, there are all kinds of stories about it. He's not trying to say that that's proof. Just saying that the mathematical likelihood is damn near 100%.
Yeah.
Nothing is 100% until you're standing there looking at a being from another planet that you can verify came from another planet. This is nothing we're talking about is proof. It's just likelihood. And the likelihood is probably 99.9%. Because when you think about the vastness of this space, and then what you pointed out, that the most abundant things in the universe are the things that are required for life.
A totally unrelated topic, and I know we'll talk about this later when Matt Pauly joins us at 4 p.m., but an in-depth article came out about Mike Schilt.
Yeah, it was interesting. So you guys, we talked about it a little bit yesterday, and this was before the article. So Kevin Acey from the San Diego Union-Tribune is the one that wrote the story. It's really long. It's really in-depth. He spoke to, I think he said 20 different people, including players and coaches and front office people with the Padres. I believe he spoke to some Cardinals people off the record, of course, because, you know, people don't like to talk bad about other people in the business of sports, in any business, really. But so Mike Schilt retired. He said that the team agrees that he chose to leave. He was not fired. He was not pushed out. But he retired because he was having a hard time with it. Now, Mike Schilt is quoted and did talk to Kevin Acey in this story. And he didn't deny anything in the story. He just kind of said, yeah, you know, look, I have a standard and I hold people to it. But basically, the story was from Kevin Acey that there were a lot of people in that team that could not take him, that he was a lot, that he would berate people, that he would unnecessarily get into people that worked in the front office, that worked on his coaching staff, like a lot of coach. And then in that story, Kevin Acey reported that when Mike Schilt was here, he said that a source told him that half the coaching staff was going to quit if the Cardinals didn't fire Mike Schilt.
We need to throw it to Michael real quick. Once he's settled and ready, I believe he is.
Is he in there?
He's in there.
Okay, take it away, Michael.
2:15 from the KMOX newsroom. We are following a developing story on the north side, the industrial riverfront area of St. Louis, seeing at least 5 ambulances, several fire trucks, and a lot of police in the 6900 block of McKissick. This is an area that's got St. Louis Concreters, also the Dial Corporation Henkel plant, hand soap laundry detergent plant, a lot of industrial in that area. Reports from St. Louis police of a shooting and a massive police response. We have reporters on the way to the scene, and we'll bring you the latest as soon as we get it.
Thank you, Michael.
Thanks, Michael.
Hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I guess we'll be tracking that. I saw him run in there. I'm like, well, something's happening.
Yeah. It's never good when Michael Calhoun comes running towards Andrew.
Not usually.
Yeah.
But the interesting part about the story with from the San Diego Union-Tribune about Mike Schilt, it really wasn't like, let's trash Mike Schilt. This was a digging like, okay, so really what was going on? Was there more going on? And all of this stuff was presented to Mike Schilt by the reporter, by Kevin Acey. I think he's a columnist, maybe. And he didn't fight it. In fact, he said, look, I know I can be difficult. He goes, I know I have high standards. I demand a lot. But it's interesting that from our view, the bad guy entirely in the firing of Mike Schilt here was Mo. It was the front office. It was... they couldn't take pushback, or they couldn't. He stepped on toes, and the reality was, it sounds like, based on this reporting, way deeper than that. Now, a lot of us, we had heard things, you know, like people like, ah, he was really tough to work with and all that. Now, he was also a really good guy. Like, he can be both. This is not a character assassination of Mike Schilt, because again, he's in the story saying, yep, I know, I'm tough on people, but the players still liked him. Not only here, but in San Diego, the players liked him. And other people on the staff did, too, but they also said that his criticisms, his lashing out at people could be over the top and put people in a bad way, to the point where even the president of baseball operations in San Diego would joke with some of the people on his staff in the front office that when he was going to talk to Schilt, he was going to be ready to duck. Because if you're going to give him news he doesn't want, he's going to be, you know, he's going to have a moment. Now, as a person that has moments, I can identify. Again, I'm not trying to like crap on Mike Schilt. I think it adds a layer to the story of what happened here.
Yeah, to me, as a St. Louisan who never met Mike, the big story is, wow, good on Mo and everyone else when they could have trashed him.
Yeah.
As they're being trashed, they could have said like, oh, no, everyone hated this guy. They kept their mouths shut. That's impressive.
Well, I mean, it's the smart way to do things, because you don't want... it's not that different in any industry or line of work, right? The more you just start to like drop bombs, the more it's going to eventually reflect on you. I think that certainly it was a good thing for the Cardinals to just let it lie. And plus, you don't want to damage the guy's chances at another job or anything like that. But it sounds like the same thing played out in San Diego that played out here, except in this case, he chose to leave because it was all too much. And he said, I think his quote was, part of the reason I'm leaving is because I realize I can't please everybody. That, you know, I'm not going to be liked by everybody, and it was a lot to deal with. So he did own at least some of it. He did not say that didn't happen, and he was given that chance, and he didn't say that. But I do think that probably, we'll talk more about this on Rush Hour Sports too, but I do think that the fact that it's the similar situation playing out in a different place, and Mike Schilt won in both places. You know, he won here and he was winning in San Diego. It's not like it was a disaster because they were losing and things got bad. So, you know, that's something that is at least worth considering as a part of the conversation, because the team here took all the heat at the time and it was poor Mike Schilt. And I'd say probably it was more 50-50 when you think about it now, when you're adding this new information.
Yeah. At the bottom of the hour, we have Brad Lamb. He's a baker and cake decorator at Celebrating Life Cakes, and he is a contestant on Is It Cake? I thought that was pretty cool. And he'll be here at the bottom of the hour live in studio. Never slowed down. Welcome back, guys. DGS, happy Wednesday. Just met Brad, the Is It Cake guy. Very cool guy. That'll be fun. It'll be fun, bottom of the hour. A couple of fun facts for you.
Yes, please.
Spelling bees are pretty much unique to the English language.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
I never had that thought.
So, yeah. Is it just because like other countries are like, yeah, we see what you're doing, not interested?
It says, I have an answer for you. It says it's due to its spelling irregularities. Other languages like Hindi, Italian, German, and Turkish have highly phonetic writing systems with a virtually one-to-one ratio of letters and sounds, making spelling very predictable and easy.
Got
it. That does make sense.
Because of course, that's the way we set it up.
English is stupid.
It really is.
We got so many rules with exceptions to the rules. And then, well, in this case, do this. In this case, do that. But sometimes not.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hate that. I before E, except after C, and then other times we don't know really why, but sometimes not otherwise too.
Yeah, I'm trying to write in schwa, not schwa. That's a schwa sound. ETA. I was a part of an experiment when I was in first and second grade. Like this is how you write the word pale. P with an A and an E connected to each other. L. They taught us this whole system of reading and writing called ETA, ITA. And then in third grade, they go, okay, forget all of that stuff. It's not P-A-E-L, it's P-A-L-E. So I can't believe that I've had any success because that was really weird.
Yeah. I don't know if you caught these, but there's a guy, a British guy who does videos on this. Or like spelling things or what's wrong with the English language.
Yes.
And he sits in his car and he's all mad.
Yeah.
He's like, okay, so if I take the word through, T-H-R-O-U-G-H, if I just take out one letter, it's not through anymore. Now it's tough.
That is weird.
And he's funny because he's swearing and he's angry. He's like, what's going on?
Yeah. It is weird.
Got another fun fact for us?
I do. Sorry, I got... distracted by something I'd written down last night.
Andrew, 30%.
I never
Andrew,
did
40%? Oh, God.
I never did come up with that.
Getting larger.
He's writing this in his sleep.
It's growing.
About 2 million years ago, there was a species of rodents that were as big as hippopotamuses.
Woo!
I'm glad I live now.
Yeah, they're fine. Saw, there's nothing wrong with rodents.
I saw going down, I guess it was Washington, but up by like the convention center last night. I saw a guy run out in the street and grab a rat by the tail.
Get out.
That was starting to run in front of my car. He grabbed the rat, and he picked it up like this, and he walked it back. And I was like, he saved that rat. And then he whipped it over to a dog that was like a little ways away, and the dog ate the rat.
This happened in real life?
Yeah, this happened in real life, like just over by the convention center in Washington.
The first thing you said today?
I kind of expect a text from you guys.
I completely forgot about that. I was driving and I was going to cross the Eads Bridge and I saw that happen and I was on the phone with my wife and I was like, this guy just saved this rat. That's so cute. Oh my God, he found the rat to a dog.
So you saw the guy pick the rat up.
Yeah, grabbed it by the tail.
To the dog.
He grabbed it by the tail and he held it up by the tail. Yeah, and then I was like, oh, that's so sweet. He looked at the rat for a while, and then he like whipped it like this over to a dog, and the dog just went.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And you're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys?
Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back, guys. DGS 234. Brad Lamb is with Celebrating Life Cakes. He is a contestant on Is It Cake on Netflix. And this season just premiered on October 8th. You can go watch it now. Nice to meet you, Brad.
Yeah, nice to meet you. Thanks for having me.
I'm going to need you to leave the shirt.
You can borrow it.
That is a tremendous shirt.
Yeah, I wore
shirt.
This on the show, too.
Oh,
in
nice.
One of my interviews. Yeah,
yeah, very cool.
Charge
yeah.
rent.
Right.
Yeah, you know, that seems stressful, like picking out your clothes
for really
a show.
It was really stressful.
Yeah, I bet.
Yeah, they give you, I think you had to bring like 10 different outfits, and they choose like 7. And you have to like try them on in front of them, do like a fashion show.
Interesting.
Yeah. It was fun though.
One time when I was doing television on, I think it was CNN, they flew me out there and I showed up and I was a larger man at the time and I had a big velvet jacket, which I loved. And then the producers are like, are you married to that jacket? And
they
I'm like, it's the only one I have. And they're like, let's lose it. Like, I'm so embarrassed. I was like, oh, yeah. God, this is terrible. So introduce yourself to the audience.
I'm Brad Lamb. I'm from St. Charles, Missouri, St. Louis area. I do cakes. I was just on Is It Cake? So kind of the highlight of my career so far.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was a dream come true.
Have you been baking since you were a little guy?
Since I was like 16. Yeah, I started at Deerberg's Marketplace in Chesterfield.
Hey, cool.
Yeah, in high school.
Yeah.
Kind of never stopped.
So people like you and Jimmy Griffin and all my friends who have undeniable talent, like, was it pretty early? Like, you're like, I can do this better than these other guys.
Well, I went to school for art, and I had always wanted to do something with art and kind of fell into doing, like, edible art. Because back when I was doing it, when I was younger, there was no Food Network. There was no anything out there. So yeah. I didn't even know it could be a career.
Huh.
And so I kind of like stumbled into it and just kind of never stopped. Yeah.
So like media caught up with your talents.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So was your go-to always making realistic cakes or just something you're like, oh, I can do this?
It kind of came along later, like with, I think the realistic cake trend's been like 5 years maybe. So I kind of got late to it. I was always like painting, like doing like a lot of edible paintings, structures like houses, things like that, and kind of just recently, like probably about 3 years ago, got into like the realistic cakes, which are really fun.
What's edible painting like?
It's amazing. It's my favorite thing to do. You paint on fondant and you use food coloring. You paint kind of like watercolor, kind of similar to watercolor paintings. And you get to eat it when you're done.
I'd be hesitant to eat it. Like even when I just get a regular cake, if it's especially beautiful, yeah. Like I don't want to.
Yeah. I've had friends that have saved paintings for like 3 years, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. So if you keep it out of the sun, they won't melt.
Yeah.
They last for a long time.
So are you a busy guy now?
Yeah. Yeah. A lot of cake orders coming in.
That's great.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah. And Halloween's coming up. That's my favorite. I like to do like witch cakes.
Yeah.
Bloody kind of gory cakes.
So. Yeah. How, I mean, I'm sure it has to do with the size of the cake and the, you know, the structure of the cake and the theme of the cake. But how long can these things take?
They can take like up to a week.
Ooh.
Yeah. They can take a long time. Yeah, depending on the size, the complexity, the theme. Yeah.
Yeah.
It can take a while.
Is it, I just ask questions no one else would ask. Is it more talent or is there some trickery involved as well?
It's talent and there's a ton of tricks. Yeah, you never stop learning. You always like, I always go on YouTube. I see what other people do. Like other people use different things and it's nice to see like all the tricks that you can do.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a lot of trickery.
What's your, if I said, here's my weirdest question. I ask people this all the time and they're always like, what a dark guy. But like if someone kidnapped someone that you love and they said, bake us a cake and depending on the quality of this cake, what would you do? Like what's your go-to? Like, okay, I know what I'm making.
Well, probably like either like something sculpted. I like to do animals, like anything Halloween. I would probably do something painted. That's kind of my go-to thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What was it like on the show?
It was a ton of fun. I met, the cast was really great, super talented. I met a friend there who we're still like best friends. She lives in LA, but she also does horror cakes. And we talk every day still. It was just a lot of fun. It was like a dream come true. It was 2 weeks in LA, paid for. Like we had a beautiful hotel. There was like a lot of downtime too. So we got to explore and like have fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've done a couple of television shows, nothing like that, but just any kind of television. Isn't it fascinating? Like being a consumer mm-hmm. and then you see behind the scenes, you're like, oh.
Yeah. Yeah. The biggest thing for me is like the downtime. Like sometimes they would take you down to the stage. They weren't ready. You had to go back up to the green room. You would sit for like an hour.
A lot of waiting.
Yeah. A lot of waiting and going back and forth.
So I'm a big fan of all sorts of baking stuff. Like right now, like the what's it called? with Henson, the Halloween Baking Championship. I love that. Mm-hmm. I just watch these things religiously. Yeah. I can't wait to start watching yours.
You'll like it. It's a really good series.
Is it? And they're great. Television's great at least portraying tension. Is mm-hmm. it really as tense as it seems?
There's a lot of stress. There's a lot of tension. Not between the cast per se, but just you want to do your best. There's a time limit. This is your huge chance. You're on you're on Netflix. It's one of the biggest shows right now for Cakes. So there's a lot of stress.
Yeah. Were you allowed to bring an assistant or they give you one?
No, you're just yourself.
How long do you get?
I think it was 8 hours for the competition. Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah. So you have to you have to know what you're doing, have a plan, and just go for it.
Yeah. So I won't ask you how you did or what the outcome was because that ruins the show.
Right.
How did you feel?
I felt great. I was really proud of what I did, what I put out there, how I represented myself, how I represented St. Louis. I was really proud.
Yeah.
Yeah.
People online are saying how much they love the show.
That's awesome. I think we were number 2.
Oh, that's
very
cool.
On Netflix. Yeah, it's amazing.
How long does it go? How many weeks?
It's 4 episodes. Yeah.
So will you try to do more of this?
I would love to. Sure. Yeah. Yeah, I'm always looking for something else.
Now you're on the radar screen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about Celebrating Life Cake Boutique.
Celebrating Life Cake, it's an amazing team of artists there. We can do any kind of cake, sculpted. I do paint. I'm doing a painting one right now. We're actually sending to Cuba in the next couple of weeks.
Wow.
Yeah. So we can do anything. Yeah, it's a really great place.
I told Brad that I need him to make me a cake of my face, but make it thin because did we just post it?
It's up on the Dave Glover Show Instagram page.
Dan the Pancake Man just made a pancake of my face for the 25th anniversary. And when I first saw it, I'm like, he did me dirty. My face, it looks so fat. And then I saw him doing it on the video, and he's using a picture of me. I'm like, that's my face.
Oh, no.
I got a face like a pancake.
Just have him do a silver dollar next time. A silver dollar pancake.
Did you eat the pancake, or did
I've
you
not
save
seen
it?
Oh, okay. Not seen it, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that could end life as we know it if I eat my own fat, my own fat face right. pancake. It's like, you didn't eat it, did you? Well, it's really nice to meet you.
Yeah, well, thank you. It was nice meeting you, too.
Yeah.
Thanks for having me.
How do people get a hold of you?
Celebrating Life Cakes. You can find me on Instagram at Bradley Ray Lamb or on Facebook under Bradley Ray Lamb.
Great. All the best. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, 2-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back, DGS on KMOX. Make sure you're with us tomorrow for the big 25th anniversary show. And I'm going to say more. I'm not going to do a speech or anything like that. But just while I have your attention, how amazing is it in anyone's lifetime that they get to do something that they dreamt of as a kid, and then it comes true? And it's so much better than you could have ever hoped it would be, right?
Yeah.
I've had a lot of heartbreak in my life, especially during the years of the show. But you put that against the backdrop of having a life that this has afforded me and an everyday experience. And, a job's a job. And so on any given day, I can be like, oh, man, wish I could call in sick and I don't feel like entertaining people today. But then when I get here, it's always great, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's always great. I have lunch with you guys. We fart around. We do the show. 40, we're like, hey, great show. See you guys tomorrow. Yeah, I'm just really lucky, and I really appreciate everyone who's ever listened to the show, but especially the OGs like Dave Hines. I didn't know that Dave had been with the show so long. When I said that Tom Turtwreck was going to be on tomorrow, he asked about Pigpen, who hasn't been with the show for 20 years. So it's just very cool. So
I did not reach out to Pigpen. I do not know Pigpen's real name. Pigpen will not be making an appearance tomorrow.
Wheels and I were talking about this, I think, last week. You were out doing something, Dave, but...
It was the interview day, I think.
Yeah, just the fact that you've done 25 years is so rare in radio.
Yeah.
The same show, and I talked about this a little bit on my show this weekend because I was giving you some flowers this weekend. It's amazing when anyone is at a job for 25 years, any job. That's definitely something that should be celebrated. But in the radio industry, it is so incredibly rare that you've always been the main host of this show. You know, that just doesn't happen. Yeah. And it's such a testament to what you've built. And it's such a testament to how incredible the audience is. So loyal, so generous, so giving, so willing to help if something is going wrong or anything's going on with charity. It's an audience that you have cultivated over 25 years. And that's my favorite part of being on this show is interacting with these people that have this connection with you and feel like they know you and feel like they know your life because you've shared so much. So it's just something to be super, super proud of.
Yeah, it really is family. And it really came home to me when my mom was dying.
Yeah.
I remember a specific day when you kept sending me all the screenshots of the Facebook page.
Yeah.
And I've always known I had a close connection with my audience, but I was blown away, just blown away.
Yeah. I mean, it was really humbling the amount of people who reached out for that. And they felt like they knew your mom.
Yeah.
Because of the way you spoke about her and her appearing on the show. And you do such a great job of painting a picture and telling a story, and that really connects with people. And yeah, it was really incredible to see how many people just wanted to be there for you during such a difficult time.
Yeah, and it's going to sound overly self-deprecating when you talk about what I've built. I never meant to build anything. Like I did, I had no master plan.
Right. Yeah, but see, that just means it's organic, though.
Yeah, it was just an everyday thing.
It's not a creation, it's its own thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, if he somehow like mapped this, if there was a blueprint for this,
right,
I would be really creeped
out. You got to sell that too, baby.
Like, how the heck?
You
got to
start selling that plan too, man. How did it be in radio for 25 years and never get fired?
Yeah.
And I didn't realize how rare that was.
Oh, my God.
When I got into it, I'm like,
yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you know.
I always relate to one of my favorite Far Side cartoons where they're in hell and there's a guy pushing a wheelbarrow full of molten rock and he's whistling. And one demon says to the other, "We're just not getting through to this guy." And that's how I feel. I just showed up every day pushing my molten rocks. Like, well, I guess he's going to do it again.
He just keeps on going.
Just keeps on going.
How often do you see like either you get a screenshot of social media or someone commenting here or calling in or meeting someone at Schnucks or whatever, do they bring something up that you have completely forgotten
about?
Oh,
yeah. All the time.
Yeah.
Yeah, all the time. I typically, they'll jog my memory and I'm like, oh my God, yeah. Well, Julia, who we love, Julie's been with me since she was 24 years old. And I think she just turned 40. And she was talking about Tom being on tomorrow. And she was like, you have to bring up the chimpanzee. And I'm like, what? She's like, you know, the smoking chimpanzee. We'll do it tomorrow. And you will never see or hear a human laugh like that. Like, you know how chimpanzees in movies would smoke a cigarette?
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Tom will poop his pants. Like, all you have to do is just show him a picture of it and he just loses. And honestly, I'll say this tomorrow. But Tom is the reason that I'm here at all, because Tom is my first producer and it was just me and him for a couple of years. And Tom is the best laugher of all time. And people would accuse him of fake laughing, and it's not true. He's not a fake laugher. But for 2 years, it was just me making one human being laugh and then everyone listening to us do that. And but for Tom's laugh, I wouldn't have made it a year.
Hmm.
So.
Sounds like a good laugh.
Yeah, I've never stopped to count how many people I've had on my show.
It's been a lot. It's like, I always say it's like SNL. Like it's been
different casts.
Yeah, the rotating cast.
Yeah.
And you are the Lorne Michaels.
I think Andrew is my longest running person.
15 years.
Yeah, I don't think anyone's ever been with the show that long.
Really?
How long was Tom on the show? When did...
Around that long.
Okay.
Yeah. Because he started moving away to other stuff a little bit, and then, you know, now he's on rock radio and thriving and loving it.
Someone was asking me if I'm going to be emotional tomorrow.
Oh, my God. They're asking you?
I know. Right?
I mean, it's good emotion, right? Like, this is fun.
Yeah.
You know, it's a good thing.
Yeah.
It's not sad, but man.
And my kids are going to be on tomorrow with me at 3.
Should we? I wish we could find, like, the sound for, like, this is your life.
Yeah.
Like the old game show.
You know what I do have at home? I have about 300 CDs of the old show.
Do you?
I really should have given you a few of those to play some old clips.
Yeah.
That would take work, though. So.
Well, it's more like I think the show is better now than it has been in the past. So it's more fun to just do the show now and bring back the old people and have fun talking about those memories and stuff.
Yeah, I'm trying to think about that. It's hard to quantify or contextualize.
Mm-hmm.
You know, was the show better then? Was the show better now? It's just been an evolution. And it's just been an evolution of a human life.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's the weird thing. Being the human, it's especially weird that this whole show, I mean, when I was 36, you know, before I was married, before Phoebe.
Mm-hmm. You know what would be interesting that is in those that box of CDs is the interview with Fred Westboro Baptist Church.
Yes.
Can't think of his last name.
Yes.
You talked to him like an hour before he died.
Yeah, the Westboro Baptist Church guy, his thing was he would be so offensive no one would keep him on more than a minute. And I kept him on for an hour. And he'd never done an interview that long.
I mean, with you know, oversight and editing and such, it might be interesting to play that sometime.
Could be. Do we run out of time here?
No, please go. Okay.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And you're seeing exactly
you know why it's not
outside of Cleveland. You know, think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why it's not coming from those guys?
Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him. And they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right. And the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.